An offer Bank of America couldn't refuse.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. Former Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson is on Capitol Hill this morning to defend some of the actions he took early on in the economic crisis, like telling Bank of America's CEO that he could lose his job if B of A didn't buy floundering brokerage Merrill Lynch. Paulson says he was justified in going to the mattresses on that one, and that the Merrill B of A marriage was in the best interest of shareholders in both companies. The government pumped $20 billion into B of A to seal that deal. But it's not the worst morning to be answering for the stimulus plan. Some good news from the banking industry. J.P. Morgan Chase announced its profits jumped 36% last quarter, the first increase in nearly 2 years. Mitchell Hartman reports on that and other highlights of the quarterly earnings parade.
A few quarters ago, the nation's biggest banks and investment firms were on the ropes, taking government bailout money. J.P. Morgan's results show that's all in the past, sort of. The company's still losing money on credit cards and mortgage foreclosures. That's from the sinking economy and job losses. But J.P. Morgan is making boatloads on trading and investment banking. It earns fees when companies issue stock to raise cash. Citigroup and Bank of America report earnings tomorrow, and analysts don't think they'll be quite as stellar as their rivals. Unlike J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs, they haven't paid back their TARP loans yet. And finally, from banks to hogs. Harley-Davidson reported earnings this morning, and they're not exactly tearing off down the road. Profit was down 91%. Blame it on the general slowdown in consumer spending. Harley says it's trying to broaden its appeal to more young and female riders. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
The markets are loving that earnings news this morning. And good news on the job front. The number of people filing for unemployment benefits fell sharply last week. London's FTSE is up 0.25%. Germany's DAX is up about 0.75%. Asian markets are having a good morning, too, thanks to some bullish news from China. More on that in just a bit. What's in a name? Chicago is about to find out. Today, the Windy City's iconic Sears Tower will be renamed the Willis Tower, after Willis Group Holdings. That's a London-based insurance brokerage. The Sears Tower has been the Sears Tower since 1973, even though Sears moved out more than a decade ago. We thought we'd see how Chicagoans feel about the rebranding of a local landmark. Tanya Santiago is a waitress at the White Palace Grill. It's about 6 blocks away from the tower. Tanya, you can walk outside and see the Sears Tower. What does it mean to you?
Oh, it means a lot. It's like family to me. It really does. It's a symbol of Chicago. And I feel that they shouldn't change the name at all.
Why do you think that they should keep it the Sears Tower?
Oh, they should keep the Sears Tower because the Sears Tower has been the Sears Tower since they've built it. It's like the Space Needle. Should they change the Space Needle name? Should they change the Brooklyn Bridge name? I mean, you know, it's been Sears Tower since they built it.
Do you think people are going to call it the Sears Tower?
Oh, I know they are. They're still going to call it the Sears Tower, no matter what.
And what about you?
I'm going to still call it the Sears Tower.
What do you recommend if we come to the White Palace? What should we order?
Get the 4 2s, your 2 pancakes, 2 eggs, 2 bacon, 2 sausage.
Well, I'll take you up on that. Anyway, thanks a lot for talking with us, Tanya. Really,
you're
appreciate
very
it.
Welcome.
American Public Media presents the Marketplace Whiteboard, videos unwrapping the basics of the financial crisis. You can watch them anytime at marketplace.org.
Some bad news from the housing industry today. RealtyTrack reports there were nearly 2 million foreclosures in the first half of this year. That's up 15% from last year. RealtyTrack's Rick Sharga says the bad economy keeps pushing those numbers higher.
We're in a transition right now where we're seeing most of the activity being driven by unemployment and other economic related problems. And it's moving away from what had been a subprime driven foreclosure problem prior to that.
The Obama administration has invested $75 billion into trying to keep people in their homes. And I mentioned some good news from China this morning. Beijing reported its economy grew nearly 8% in the last 3 months. That's thanks in large part to mega stimulus from China's state-controlled banking system. But there's a lot of debate over how real that growth is. From Shanghai, Marketplace's Scott Tong reports.
In this corner, Beijing hedge fund advisor Bill McCahill.
China has a very resilient economy and is doing really quite well.
McCahill is with the research firm JLM Pacific Epoch. He sees a genuine recovery sparked by China's $600 billion stimulus. The package focuses on infrastructure work, like laying 13,000 miles of new rail track, triple the length of the U.S. Transcontinental Railroad.
These big construction projects, particularly railways and railway equipment, have now begun to kick in. And as one travels around China, this is very, very apparent.
These mega projects need raw materials like iron ore. So China's binging on commodities and stoking up the prices. In the other corner stands Michael Pettis, finance professor. He's more skeptical.
That movie has never turned out with a happy ending.
Pettis teaches at the prestigious Tsinghua University. He warns that most of the stimulus takes the form of bank lending, and too loose credit can lead to substandard loans that go bad. Heard that before?
And I don't think I can find a single instance in history in which you've had a massive expansion in the banking system, which didn't result in a huge increase in bad lending.
The bulls and the bears also spar over Chinese consumption. Bill McCahill notes retail spending in China keeps growing by double digits, and that more cars these days sell in China than in the U.S.
China's a vast continental economy with pent-up demand that can go on for decades, really.
But how much demand is there? Michael Pettis has his doubts.
Total consumption in China is not much greater than total consumption in France. It's just not big enough. U.S. consumers account for six Chinas.
Watching this fight are global investors. Pettis fears they're hyping the China is back story. Maybe so. But this morning's impressive growth figures score at least 1 point for the bulls. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. Thanks for joining us.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.